Hello and welcome to Here and Now. Today is Friday the 15th of August and here in the studio is the Green Team, ready and willing and able to read you items from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Chris and today I'm joined by Graham and Lynn, who you'll hear from in a moment, and Mike, our stalwart producer, who deals with the technical stuff. Gwen is not with us today. I read you the first article, which is from the Dawlish Gazette, and the headline is the front page headline, Hands Off Our Parishes. City councillors in Exeter have been accused of attempting a land grab after it announced proposals to swallow up 15 parishes from Teignbridge. Plans to take over the neighbouring rural parishes have sparked anger, with critics calling the move a full-on assault. The move, dubbed a super council, would see the parishes of Dawlish Town, Ashcombe, Mamhead, Starcross, Kenton, Chudley Town, Powderham, Exminster, Ken, Dunchidiock, Shillingford St George, Ede, Holcombe Burnell, Whitestone and Tedburn St Mary, currently within the Teignbridge Council boundary, become part of the larger unitary authority of Exeter. Local councils across the country will face major changes as part of the government's move to streamline the way local authorities work. County Councillor Alan Connett, who represents Exminster, reacted to the announcement saying, "Changing the way councils are organised and run in Devon is a cash-wasting priority for this government that is being rushed through. Exeter, I suspect, has already decided what it wants. But what's good for Exeter is not necessarily the same for the rural communities it wants to gobble up. In Devon, it will mean the abolition of district councils and the creation of larger unitaries covering the county. The existing districts all favour a 1-5-4 model, in which Plymouth stands alone and the rest of the districts split to create two larger councils. The five council section would include Exeter, East Devon, Mid Devon, Turridge and North Devon. The fourth council section would be Torbay, Teignbridge, Southhams and West Devon. But Exeter City Council say the right way to go is an urban unitary council for Exeter and the surrounding areas. An urban unitary council for an expanded Plymouth and a rural and coastal unitary council for the rest of Devon. Some critics have argued the move would leave residents under a Labour-controlled authority but without having a say. Others say the current government timeline gives little time to give a chance to consult people who would be affected by such significant change. Tynmouth Lib Dem County and District Councillor David Cox added, "It sounds like Exeter Labour want to use rural parishes to make up the numbers. Do the city slickers see surrounding areas as cash cows?" One Exminster resident commented, "The cost will be unbelievable. Just the logistics of the waste and recycling will be astronomical, as Exeter hasn't got the resources, manpower or vehicles to do this." Exeter City Council leader Phil Bialik said, "Reorganisation presents a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reshape public services to improve outcomes for residents, address inequalities and deliver value for money. By joining forces with key locations close to the city, places with a strong connection and affiliation with Exeter, we can create a new unitary council which accelerates growth and allows communities to thrive." Exeter City Council members will discuss the report on August the 14th, so yesterday.
Hello, I'm Graham, and my first headline today from the Tynmouth Post is Grand Gesture from Boat to Lifeboat. BOAT, in very strong capital letters, is referring to a Tynmouth boat club that disbanded earlier this year, and it donated a sizeable amount of its remaining funds to the town's Royal National Lifeboat Institute. A Boat Owners Association of Tynmouth, what I've just said, BOAT, presented a cheque for more than £8,000 to Tynmouth RNLI last Sunday, August the 3rd, at the lifeboat station's open day. Boat, which was based at Polly Steps, formally closed in March and running for more than 35 years. It provided invaluable support to boat owners and operated as a hub for sharing advice, building friendships, and, most importantly, conducting regular boat watches to monitor moorings for vandalism, storm damage, and theft. However, like many community organisations, it was heavily impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. As membership and activity declined, an emergency general meeting was held earlier this year to determine the club's future. With an almost unanimous agreement that Boat had fulfilled its purpose, the decision was made to close and, in line with the original constitution, to donate all remaining funds to the RNLI. The group held a final social gathering at the end of March before its wooden social hut and metal engine storage shed were removed. We were very pleased that in our original constitution, any monies left in the closing club's account should be donated to the RNLI. After various expenses of clearing the site, we were delighted to make this donation at the lifeboat open day, said former Boat member Steve Bentley. The cheque was presented at the Tynmouth RNLI open day, a highlight of the station's community calendar, where hundreds of visitors were able to watch rescue demonstrations and water safety activities. The donation was formally handed over to RNLI Tynmouth fundraising chair Wendy Richards-Wood, who was joined by lifeboat operations and manager Andy Lilburn and several RNLI volunteer crew members.
Hello, I'm Lynn, and my headline is Adventurous Bobby Dies at the Age of 100. An inspiring and adventurous centenarian who celebrated her 100th birthday in January this year has died. Tributes have been paid to Barbara Bobby Blanchford, who lived in Newton Abbot with her late husband Don from the 1980s onwards, before moving to a care home in Bovey Tracy 2 years ago. Her son Eric said that she had attributed her long and healthy life to a combination of a good nutritious diet, an active lifestyle, a loving family, a large group of trusted friends, a deep and lasting religious faith, and finally, the occasional glass of wine or Bailey's Irish Cream. Her family of sons, Eric and Roy, 3 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren were always her pride and joy. And alongside family life, she loved adventure, travelling regularly with Don on holidays, particularly within Europe. She went cross-country skiing in Wisconsin, USA in her 60s, travelled in a hot air balloon in her 70s, and for her 80th birthday visited the Golden Triangle in India with Eric, first to Delhi, then to Agra and the Taj Mahal, and finally to Jaipur. Eric said Bobby was not only a natural Good Samaritan in her everyday life, but became a formal member of the Samaritans in Southampton for many years. She also helped with Meals on Wheels, and separately she visited hospital wards taking books on wheels to patients, and was a long-time member of Mothers Union until more recent years. Born in Plymouth in 1925, she joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force when she was just 17, despite knowing her parents would not be pleased. She was determined to enlist, and it was during her time in the WAF that she was given the nickname Bobby to distinguish her from the many other women called Barbara in her unit. After initial training, she was posted in 1943 to Exeter Airport, where she and her colleagues plotted the locations of incoming German aircraft during the bombing raids. After the war, Bobby met and married Don in 1948, remaining devoted to each other for 73 years until Don's death.
They then retired to Newton Abbot in the 1980s, where they had a very fulfilling life, until Bobby moved to Mulberry House, the residential home, at the age of 98. Her funeral will be held at Blaise Church, Hackham, where she worshipped for many years on August the 29th. And the service will begin at midday with a lunch for family and friends afterwards.
Lego robots take over Devon's libraries. Devon's libraries have introduced hands-on Lego robotics and coding workshops for children. The initiative, funded through the Library Improvement Fund from the Arts Council England, brings Lego robotics and coding experiences to libraries across the county, including Newton Abbot. It's all part of the Devon Digital Creator project, investing in science, technology, engineering and maths, STEM, with the aim of boosting the digital skills and creativity of Devon's children and young people through engaging and accessible activities. Lego robotics are sets that combine building blocks with programmable electronic components, allowing anyone over the age of 6 to build whatever they want and then code it to perform functions. It provides children a route into STEM through play, socialization, and teamwork. Over the past year, hundreds have taken part in the hands-on workshops. As a result of this success, Libraries Unlimited, who run Devon's libraries on our behalf, has secured additional support, including Lego League kits from the Institute of Engineering and Technology, and further Lego sets through the Reading Agency's Reading Sparks program. These resources will support ongoing coding clubs like Coda Dojo Exmouth and enable summer activities tied into the library reading challenges. Alex Kitto, Chief Exec of Libraries Unlimited, said, "This funding and the initiatives we've delivered have made an incredible difference to libraries and communities across Devon and Tor Bay. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to change people's perception of what a library is and to develop our programme of STEM engagements and activities for children, families and adults alike. I've been inspired and humbled to see how the children's confidence, skills, friendships and ability to play transform over the course of a Lego coding session."
2 in 5 GP appointments held remotely. More than 2 in 5 GP appointments in Devon in June took place over the phone or online, recent figures show. In England, this figure was 1/3, the highest proportion since the COVID-19 pandemic. The Royal College of GPs said remote consultations offer convenience and flexibility that many patients value, adding most appointments still take place in person. NHS England data shows 315,570, which works out at 41%, of all 772,572 GP appointments attended in the NHS Devon Integrated Care Board area in June were carried out over the phone or online. It was up from 246,114 and 35% a year earlier, and 251,353 in June 2020 during the pandemic, although the proportion was down from 45% then. Professor Camilla Hawthorne, Chair of the Royal College of GPs, said remote consultations, whether delivered over the phone or via video, can offer convenience and flexibility that many patients value. Often a GP might initially consult with a patient remotely and then ask them to come into the practice if it's necessary to see them in person. In the NHS Devon Integrated Care Board area, 56% of the consultations were carried out face-to-face in June, and 80% were done through home visits. Professor Hawthorne said, many patients prefer accessing care in person rather than remotely. She added, the college supports a mixed method approach to delivering care in general practice, adding decisions on whether appointments should be carried out in person or remotely are made between clinicians and patients.
Angry protesters pack health meeting. Health chiefs have refused to rule out controversial changes in treatment for heart attack patients in South Devon, despite a public outcry. A proposed trial, which would have seen some patients being taken to Exeter rather than the Torbay Hospital for emergency treatment, was withdrawn by the Devon Integrated Care Board, or ICB, following protests and questions in the Houses of Commons. But during a highly charged meeting at Torbay Council Adult Social Care Scrutiny Board, Councillor Martin Brooke asked, will the proposal that was tabled in May come back again? Dr. Peter Collins, NHS Devon's Chief Medical Officer, answered, possibly. I can't say no to that. Opponents pointed out that taking patients to Exeter rather than Torbay for treatment would add at least half an hour to the average journey time, putting lives at risk. At its meeting in May, the Care Board withdrew that proposal in the face of fierce public opposition. Instead, at its July meeting, it considered developing a case for change instead, looking at all cardiology services in the county. Over the next 11 months, it says it will talk to doctors and the public to get their views. More than 250 people packed the Riviera Centre at Torquay for the Scrutiny Board meeting, many of them making their voices heard during the debate. Campaigner Susie Colley told councillors, when a heart attack occurs, every minute counts. Time is life. So any difference in travel time could mean the difference between life and death. She said Torbay Hospital sets high standards and deserves investment rather than a managed decline.
Mystery rotting flesh smell solved. The mystery of a decaying flesh smell which has been hanging over Exminster for days, may have been solved. Environmental health officers were called in to investigate following complaints of the terrible stench, which was said to be unbearable throughout the village. Now local farmer Jerry Sanders Carr has come forward to say it may be as the result of spreading organic matter on his land. He apologised to residents, saying, because of the wind direction, I fear it is coming from the farm where we are currently spreading organic manures and compost. The smell will dissipate once the spreading process is complete, and we will also be incorporating the manures into the soil in the coming days. These materials are great feed for the soil biome, encouraging the bacterial and fungal activity and help capture CO2 from the atmosphere. Please rest assured there are no dead animals involved. The smell is gypped because of the manures being organic and having been passed through a digester. The compost is from green waste collected by the council in the Exeter area. Organic manure is from South West Water after being processed in a digester to produce energy. Prior to application, all my fields were tested for nutrients, and if not suitable to spread, I can't spread either product. Prior to spreading, the local environmental health officer is informed, and also the environment agency. So the required licences are in place before work takes place. Mr. Sanders Carr said there would be a further application of the same material later in the year, most likely in the autumn. He said the product has been used for many years on farms. It was unfortunate that today the wind direction did not help. I have just finished incorporating most of the products into the ground and the smell will most likely dissipate now.
Second single goal defeat for Tynmouth. Tynmouth AFC suffered a second defeat by a single goal when they headed on their travellers to Torrington AFC. Their 2025 26 Southwest Peninsula League campaign got underway with a 1-0 loss away at Ilfracombe Town, and then it was Torrington who beat them this time around. The North Devon side actually led by 3-0 at the break, courtesy of strikes from Tom Davey, Callum Deema and Jack Seedhouse. Isaac Reed and Zach Cadaru found the back of the net as Liam Jones' men got their fight back on track, the latter being named as Tynmouth's man of the match, but a crucial third goal eluded them, unfortunately. Next in the schedule for Tynmouth is a home game against Okehampton Argyle, with Richard Washburn's side set to visit Coombe Valley on Saturday, August the 18th.
Petition over coastal railway line protection. A petition calling on the government to reinstate the last phase of works to protect the vulnerable coast rail line between Dawlish and Tynmouth has secured almost 500 signatures in just a few days. The petition was launched by Modern Railways deputy editor and rail campaigner Andy Bowles-Roden, who described the cliffs above the main line as the sword of Damocles. Phase 5 of the long-term South West Rail Resilience Programme was due to have strengthened the cliffs at Holcombe, but the government has failed to provide funding for this last piece of the resilience jigsaw, with the cash being earmarked for other schemes. Mr. Bowles-Roden, who led the successful campaign to save the Knight Riviera sleeper train from closure in 2005, says the works must be completed. He said these cliffs were identified as by far the biggest geotechnical risk to the railway by Network Rail in 2014, after 20,000 tons of rock fell onto the railway, closing it for 2 months, and they remain so. Until these vital works are completed, those cliffs are a sandstone sword of Damocles hanging over our beautiful but fragile railway. Should they fall again, a huge area of the country will lose its only rail link for weeks and potentially months. We need as many people as possible to sign the petition, write to their MP and to travel on the railway to make an inarguable case to the government that the full resilience programme must be completed. We know from the success of our Save the Sleeper that if the Southwest speaks with one voice, we can all make a positive difference and secure the future of the lifeline transport link against the effects of major cliff falls.
Cycling traffic chaos will be discussed in debrief. A debrief is to be held following the first big national event to be staged in Dawlish. The British Cycling Dawlish Grand Prix was considered a coup for the town to be chosen to host the final race of the series of elite professional cyclists. But the event, raced in a circuit around the town centre, sparked criticism over arrangements for road closures and traffic diversions. Some motorists described the traffic as chaos, and cars were bumper to bumper in narrow streets where traffic was diverted as town centre roads were closed off for much of the day. A spokesman for Dawlish Town Council said, "Thank you so much, Dawlish, for your support during our first big national event. We've been reading all the concerns, the constructive ones, and positive comments. This has been a big learning curve, and we plan on making it a positive experience for Dawlish." The council agreed it was not perfect, but pointed out it was rare for an event of this size to run exactly to plan on the first of the occasion. It continued, "It was a learning experience and we plan on examining things much closer to help future town events. While we greatly understand the moans regarding traffic, there must also be an understanding of what it takes to keep a town alive. Without special events such as this, a town dies. We must all come together for the greater good of the town and not just our own selfish needs." The town has greatly benefited from that brief moment of inconvenience. Town, District and County Councillor Rosie Dawson described the race as amazing. She said, "Yes, there were some issues with traffic, but that will all be brought to the Town Council and British Cycling debrief. Cyclists and supporters came from all over the UK, and a few said they must return for a short break, as Dawlish is incredible."
Emergency charity ambulance reveals most common call-outs. The most common emergencies attended by the Devon Air Ambulance, DAA, during July were cardiac arrests, the charity has revealed. In July, the DAA helicopter or response cars were tasked to a total of 205 incidents. The flight was deployed 134 times and the critical care cars 64 times, while the volunteer responder team helped on 7 occasions. The busiest day was Wednesday. Most of the call-outs were to injuries, which was 57.1%, while the rest were medical emergencies. 6 patients were in Dorset, 9 in Somerset and 4 in Cornwall. The most common emergency was cardiac arrests with 39 patients, followed by 17 patients involved in falls.
Thousands received warm home discount. Tens of thousands of households in Devon received discount rebates on their electricity bills last winter, recent figures show. But in June, the Department for Energy Security and Net Zero announced that the £150 warm home discount will be extended to another 2.7 million households to help with fuel costs next winter. This will bring the number of households eligible for the rebate up to just over 6 million. Introduced in 2011, the Warm Home Discount Scheme requires larger energy suppliers to support low-income households with their energy costs through direct £150 rebates on their electricity bills. The figures show that 33,822 households in Devon received this rebate last winter, representing about 9% of households in the area. And across Britain, the Warm Homes Discount Scheme delivered discounts to more than 3.2 million households last winter, including 5.1 million for Devon households. National Energy Action Head of Policy Matt Copeland welcomed the increasing number of households receiving the rebates across the country, adding the scheme is a lifeline for households in fuel poverty. But he warned the value of the rebates is not keeping up with inflation, adding the discount has only increased by £10 over a period when energy bills have shot up by hundreds of pounds a year. Changes announced to the Warm Homes Discount Scheme include removing some eligibility restrictions, meaning every bill payer on means-tested benefits will qualify.
There are 2 obituaries today. Rita Ann Lloyd died peacefully at Briarcroft Care Home in Tynmouth on the 31st of July 2025. A memorial service is to be held at Humber Barn, Higher Humber Farm, Bishop Stainton, on Thursday the 28th of August at 12:15. More information can be got from Les Down, Funeral Director in Paignton. Gillian Ann Dennett passed away on the 24th of July, aged 88. The funeral service will be held on Tuesday the 19th at St Peter's Chapel, Exeter and Devon Crematorium at 11:30. More information from Dawlish Funeral Care and Lawn Terrace. And a few events for your diary. Macmillan Family Charity Day at the Lansdowne. It's with enormous excitement we wish to invite our friends and families to our Macmillan Cancer Charity event on Saturday the 23rd of August for the third year running. Having raised a total of £15,457 over the past 2 years, we're aiming higher than before this year and need your help. With 1 in 2 of us now having a diagnosis of cancer at some point in our lives, it goes without saying to suggest that Macmillan Cancer Support has helped or aided our friends or loved ones at least once so far in our lives. Many far and wide will remember our dear friend and colleague Emma Rabbage, who sadly lost her battle to cancer in summer 2022. It is in Emma's and all our loved ones' names that the Lansdowne hold this annual charity event to raise vital support funding to those most in need. We have a huge raffle taking place, singers, a band and a DJ playing throughout the day and night. Punch and Judy shows, magicians, face painting, hog roast, ice cream cart for children and adults to all enjoy. Please come and help support what will be a fantastic day on Saturday, August the 23rd. And on Tuesday next week, Devon Community Transport are going on a mystery trip. On Wednesday next week, Zebediah and party are on Sheldon Green at 7 p.m. And Thursday next week is the day the post office at Starcross opens. There isn't anything going on the following week apart from Devon Community Transport going to Traygo Mills. And this is also a reminder that it's our 10th birthday cream tea on Wednesday the 10th of September. And someone from one of the teams will be ringing you to see if you're able to come and if you need transport. National Mobile Phone Alert planned. A national emergency alert is due to be tested throughout the Southwest on Sunday, September the 7th. The government will send a test emergency alert to all mobile phones across the West Country and the rest of the UK at around 3 p.m. This is as part of plans to strengthen the preparedness for emergencies. The emergency alert system is used to warn if there's a danger to life nearby, including extreme weather. It allows vital information and advice to be sent to people rapidly in an emergency. During the test, mobile phones across West Devon and beyond will vibrate and make a loud siren sound for roughly 10 seconds, even if they've been set to silent. A message will also appear on the phone screens, making it clear the alert is only a test. There are approximately 87 million mobile phones in the UK. The test will be the second of the newly introduced mobile phone alerts, following a commitment to regular tests, ensuring they work and to familiarise everyone with the alerts, as in other countries.
Carnival triumphs despite water skiing challenges. This year's Dawlish Celebrates Carnival comes to a rousing conclusion on Friday with the grand finale, the Community Parade. Despite severe restrictions on space due to the major work ongoing in the town by South West Water, the committee has pulled off a spectacular week of fun and entertainment. The Volunteer Committee, or the Pinkies as they are known due to the colour of their shirts, were determined there would be a carnival and have worked around the available space. This meant a return of the raft race for the first time since 2019, an event going on the beach at Manor Gardens and Dawlish Warren. Friday night's parade will involve Tynmouth's Alice Cross Centre in true show-stopping style with a spectacular 23-metre Chinese dragon, a stunning community-built artwork. Sponsored by Dawlish Celebrates Carnival, the dragon has been brought to life through a vibrant collaboration with community artist Sam Locke and the Makery. Crafted entirely from reclaimed and recycled materials, every inch of the dragon has been designed, built and decorated within the walls of the Alice Cross Centre or at the Makery. The carnival theme this year is Around the World in 80 Days, and the Alice Cross Dragon will take pride of place as the final entry in the parade. The week has seen a wide range of events and activities, including the Town Crier Competition, won by Paul Goff from Nuneaton and Bedworth, and Best Dressed Crier was Les Ellis from Dartmouth. This year also saw a Junior Town Crier Competition, won by Rosie with Jago in second place. Following the theme of Around the World in 80 Days, the Bollywood and Bhangra Night proved a big hit and went down a storm with the crowds learning the moves and watching energetic dancing from the experts. The best dressed window competition was won by 10 green bottles. The beach day was packed with crowds and competitors lined up with their inventive crafts for the raft race, back after 6 years, and there was a display by the RNLI. Carnival Week has been a challenge for committee volunteers this year as it comes in the middle of South West Water's multi-million pound scheme to improve water quality. The work includes use of a large part of the lawn where previously much of the carnival activity was focused. This meant the cancellation of the iconic pram race and the It's a Knockout competition. Angie Weatherhead, chair of Dawlish Celebrates Carnival, said, "This year, when the initial plans for the South West Water works on the lawn were published, the carnival committee really doubted whether anything could be put on in 2025. We then felt it was even more important to put something on, and the show Dawlish was still open this summer. Early positive discussions with South West Water and Amplify meant we could start to plan for Carnival Week. We're very grateful for the support we've received, such as South West Water opening up Westcliff Road on parade day to make sure there's access for emergency vehicles."
Celebrity couple in fresh planning battle. Celebrity couple Aid Edmondson and Jennifer Saunders are facing a fresh planning battle over a £250,000 extension to their historic Grade 2 listed Dartmoor home. The absolutely fabulous and bottom stars bought their £2 million country retreat 30 years ago to enjoy rural life. The pair, who currently split time between a London townhouse and their Devon home, eventually plan to live in the southwest full time. Last year, they were granted planning permission subject to adhering to several conditions to carry out a range of landscaping and construction works to the property to better suit their needs and lifestyles. These works include creating a new entrance and parking area, extending a workshop, adding a terrace, replacing a window, building a new garden pavilion and installing an air source heat pump and a solar array. However, the couple have now applied for several of the planning conditions to be discharged. Dartmoor National Park Authority is now considering an application to discard some of these conditions, including a requirement of a removal of an external staircase and first floor door, and the installation of a first floor window that should occur within 1 year of the original planning permission being granted. The couple also want to remove the stipulation that details of a new replacement painted timber door should be submitted and approved in writing by planners. But planners have been reluctant to consent to the plans last year due to concerns that the impact of the proposals on their listed building had not been minimised, and planners have noted that the interior and exterior of the building are of high significance architecturally, historically and archaeologically. A decision on the application to remove the conditions will be made at a later date.
Companies urged to bid for toilet cleaning contract. A 5-year cleaning contract is up for grabs to look after Tynemouth's new town council-run toilets. Tynemouth Town Council has urged local companies not to miss out on a chance to bid for the contract, as it looks to appoint a company that will care for 6 public toilets, including those yet to be installed at Eastcliff, The Point, Quay Road and The Den. The usual tendering process favoured by government tends to alert only national businesses, with smaller operators often unaware. With the contract worth a 6-figure sum, Town Clerk Ian Wedlake is keen the net is thrown as wide as possible. He said whichever firm makes a successful bid, it will have to meet certain professional standards and prove it is fit to act on behalf of local government. "I know bigger companies can do this, but I'm sure we've local ones that could also make the grade." I'm not suggesting we would favour one over another, but we feel it's only fair smaller operators who may not see the tendering ad on the government's website are in with a chance to being considered. Teignmouth Town Council is investing residents' money improving public toilets at a time when many communities are facing the loss of such facilities. In that same spirit, we hope, potentially, to bolster the local economy by giving local businesses a chance to prove they've got what it takes. The official ad states the council is to appoint a competent supplier to provide high-quality cleaning services to the council's public toilets, which provide a positive image of the area.
Devon footballing stalwart dies. A widely respected Devon football personality has sadly passed away. Barry Hayward died unexpectedly at the weekend. As well as playing for many years, Barry was also a well-regarded referee and football coach. He served as a vice chair of the South Devon League and had been a member of the Devon FA Council since 2000, holding the position of vice chair of the South Area Committee. Barry was not only a respected figure within Devon football, but also a caring, sincere and much-loved member of our football family, the Devon FA spokesperson said. His loss will be felt deeply by all who knew him. A huge advocate of women's football, Barry managed Liverton Ladies and Exeter Rangers in the 1980s before taking on roles with Torquay United Ladies, Stoke Gabriel Ladies, Galton Ladies and Brixham Villa. His commitment to the growth of women's football in the South Area and across Devon was unwavering, and his impact on the game will be felt for generations, the Devon FA commented. Barry registered as a referee in June 1992 and was an active and valued member of the South Devon Referees Association. He was known for his passion for supporting and guiding new referees. Alongside his officiating, Barry played a leading role in the administration and development of football in Devon. His influence was especially evident in the County Cup programme, where he was instrumental in developing the finals into a memorable occasions that they have become today. The Devon football family has lost one of its true champions, and he will be deeply missed.
Search and rescue team gets tech boost. Volunteers with Dartmoor Search and Rescue in Ashburton have been given a technical boost to help with their work in remote, rural locations. The team has been granted a connectivity boost from local technology company Unity 5, which will improve their operational capabilities. Unity 5 has provided the charity with crucial Starlink mini connectivity that includes a year's subscription and partners with GoToSIM for 5 essential roaming SIM cards. Starlink is a satellite-based internet connectivity system that overcomes the internet availability limitations in the rural terrain in which the team operates. Until now, it has faced significant connectivity issues that inhibited its ability to use digital tools, which would enhance how it plans, manages, and communicates during search and rescues. The volunteer charity DSRT Ashburton responds to more than 40 emergency service requests for help every year. It provides vital assistance not only to individuals lost or injured in remote locations such as Dartmoor, but increasingly to vulnerable people affected by mental health challenges or dementia across the whole of South and East Devon. A spokesman for DSRT Ashburton's said thanks to Utility 5's generous sponsorship of the Starlink connectivity for both our mobile incidental control vehicle and our rescue centre, we're now equipped to fully embrace digital technologies that enhance our operations.
Fire crews kept busy. A Teignbridge fire crew has been busy of late, attending a number of incidents. The crew from Buckfast Fire Station recently assisted the ambulance service with removing a casualty from a difficult property because of tight and winding stairs. They put out a grass fire in the Dean Prior area, which was caused by a faulty electrical transformer, and mobilised to what was believed to be a high-rise fire in Torquay. The Torquay fire turned out to be a small one involving cooking. And on Monday, August the 11th, the crew, alongside firefighters from Ashburton, tackled a fire in Oswell Wood. The crew used a water carrier and intermediate pumps to convey water to the fire ground. And there's a photograph of the burning grasses.
Gin for brunch. A Teignmouth bistro has launched a bespoke gin based on its best-selling menu item, Avocado Smash. Brunch, located in Teignmouth's Triangle, teamed up with Exeter Gin to create the avocado and lime tipple. Brunch owner Dave Hadcroft explained that Exeter Gin founder Karen Skerritt is a regular customer at the cafe, and she has come up with the idea of joining forces to create a special brunch gin. Dave jumped at the idea and brought all his staff to the Exeter Gin Distillery at the Broadmeadow Industrial Estate in Teignmouth to create their own concoctions. He describes the brunch avocado and lime gin as having a clean, crisp taste. Exeter Gin is no stranger to working with Teignmouth businesses and has worked with Laura Wall and Teignmouth Rugby Club.
Prolific shoplifter, 22, sentenced over 15 thefts. A prolific shoplifter has been sentenced for 15 offences of theft from shops in Dawlish, Teignmouth and Torbay. Ben Williams, 22, of no fixed address, appeared before magistrates sitting in Plymouth last week. He has been in custody overnight, having been arrested in Dawlish by the neighbourhood beat officer PC George Miller while he was on foot patrol in the town. Williams pleaded guilty to all 15 offences and a suspended prison sentence order was implemented for 18 weeks. He was also ordered to pay compensation to Cost Cutter in Dawlish of £547 and Tesco in Teignmouth of £98. Further compensation orders were made to the Co-op stores in Torquay and Paignton.
Freemasons Quiz Night raises £600. A charity quiz evening organised by Freemasons in Teignmouth raised more than £600. Benevolent Lodge 303 Teignmouth hosted the event to support charities including Volunteering in Health's Brighter Days group, as well as Alzheimer's Research UK, Teenage Cancer Trust, Variety Children's Charity, Crash and Lighthouse Construction Charity. More than 50 people enjoyed the evening, hosted by Adam Creasy, who was the worshipful master. Gary Abraham, charity steward, managed to navigate the heckling and keeping the teams in check with a wide range of questions, dingbats and challenging picture rounds. Some great prizes were provided for the raffle too. The Brighter Days team won the quiz with a fantastic 105 points. The evening was a great success, raising more than the £600. Brighter Days is a project that Volunteering in Health provides and coordinates. The course itself is run by key volunteers. The focus is to provide a space where those experiencing both physical and mental health issues can come together to talk and connect with each other. Brighter Days meet every Tuesday from 10:30 to 1:30 for a cup of tea and a biscuit. This leads to the forming of friendships, and in turn a supportive network is created where like-minded individuals can look after positive ways to support their health needs.
Volunteers pitch in to help maintain verges. Volunteers have been thanked for helping to pitch in to clear Exminster's wildflower verges. They were out in force to rake away cut debris from the verge on the north entrance to the village. A spokesman for environmental group Exeter Green Spaces said, "This is such an important task as it encourages the oxeye daisies and all the other flowers to come back again next year and make a great display entering the village." The planter was also tidied up, and rubbish found in the area picked up. The verge is a valuable wildflower area in the village, with primroses followed by the oxeye daisies and marsh orchids among many others. It is intentionally left uncut over the summer, but now the vegetation has been cut back and mown. The raking was needed to maintain the wild flowers.
Everything in the garden was rosy. My next article's all about the flower show that happened in Dawlish last week. A kaleidoscope of colour graced the Strand Centre in Dawlish last weekend, courtesy of Dawlish Garden Society. The Society were holding their annual summer show at the venue, and with a bumper selection of exhibits on display, visitors were kept entertained, viewing, and judges were kept busy making the tricky decisions. "As always, the standard was very, very good," said flower judge Ian Hackett, as he was tasked with the tricky choice of awarding coveted first, second and third prizes. As well as the flower, fruit and vegetable competitions, there was also prizes up for grabs in sections for photography, baking and craft work. Meanwhile, outside the centre, the Society's plant stall did a roaring trade, selling a selection of plants grown by local green-fingered experts. And I can't leave this article without saying there's some lovely photographs that accompany it, showing the wide range of flowers, chrysanthemums, beautiful single buds in vases for the judges to choose between, begonias, fuchsias, and last of all, a beautiful cake, which does look rather tasty.
Dartmoor Legends Remembered in Book. Dartmoor guide Emma Kunis has produced a new book retelling some of the moor's most famous folk tales and interpreting what they mean today. Emma is the granddaughter of Eric Hemery, author of High Dartmoor Land and People. This was published in 1982, one of the most celebrated books on Dartmoor, and is often referred to as Dartmoor's Bible. Now Emma has followed in her grandfather's footsteps by publishing a book, Dartmoor Myths and Legends, Exploring Origins and Inspirations, in which she takes old legends including Kitty Jay, Old Crockern and the Hairy Hands and delves into their roots and relevance. It is illustrated by artist Gina Hemery, her aunt. For some years, Emma has worked as a guide on Dartmoor after leaving an international corporate job in London 11 years ago because of ill health. Coming back to her roots has been an enormously positive experience. "My maternal family has lived on or around Dartmoor for generations," she said. "My granny Val introduced her first husband, my grandfather Eric Hemery, to Dartmoor in the 1940s, and they moved here in the early 1950s. Recovering from a leg injury that he gained during the war, he walked regularly on the moor and became interested in its beautiful mosaic landscape. Throughout the 1950s, he styled himself the Dartmoor Guide, giving lectures and leading guided walks and pony tracks across Dartmoor, supported by his family. Emma wrote the book after guests on her guided walks suggested she record the stories she often tells while out leading hikes and nature connection experiences that she gives to locals and visitors. She said, "Initially the book was just going to be about retelling of the myths and legends that I'd grown up with, but my first degree was in history, and as a Dartmoor guide I couldn't resist researching more deeply and interweaving themes of archaeology, geology, flora, fauna, ponies and more. My hope is that readers will both enjoy the book as well as learn and care more deeply about Dartmoor, its land and its people."
Regatta celebrates town's love of sea and river. The Committee of Tynmouth Regatta has thanked all its supporters after a successful week of events. This year's Tynmouth Regatta began on Sunday, August the 3rd, with a family fun run and events throughout the week, including the popular floaty McFloaty race, dinghy rowing, raft races, and a crab catching competition, as well as land-based activities such as a family treasure hunt, dog show, sports day, pavement art, and the sandcastle competition. Our aim is to always keep our events free for children to enter, and we couldn't do this without many local businesses, friends, colleagues, and those of you who buy our raffle tickets, said a spokesperson from the Tynmouth Regatta Committee. Next year's Tynmouth Regatta takes place from Sunday, August the 2nd to Sunday, August the 9th, 2026. And I would like to say here, 6 photographs here in front of me. 4 of them have children having a most wonderful day by the looks of it. This first one I can see, children in big sacks trying to win their race with very difficulty on the grass by the looks of it, but they're doing their very best. The pavement art on the slabs at the front of the sea there, so not on the sea, but on the promenade, really, really very attractive. Of the others, of the children, though, and it's an obvious one, treasure hunt time in the sand. And there looks to be about 40 to 50 children doing their best to find their treasure. But all of them, in any photograph they're in, seem to be having a wonderful time.
Tyler cuts his long hair to support wig charity. A teenager from Newton Abbott has donated his hair to a charity that makes wigs for young people who have lost their own hair through cancer treatment. It was 2021 when 9-year-old Tyler Saunders decided to grow his hair long. And while the style certainly suited the young man, the short-haired life recently came calling for the now 13-year-old teenager. Tyler decided to have his hair cut and donated to the Little Princess Trust, a charity that provides free real hair wigs for children and young people up to the age of 24 who have lost their own hair through cancer treatment or other conditions, after learning that 2 of his brother's best friends had lost family to cancer. His hair will be made into a wig for a little girl who's lost her hair in this way. The young man has also been fundraising to pay for the hair to be made into a wig and for it to be fitted and styled at no extra cost for the little girl's family. At present, Tyler has raised more than £800 for this. Tyler, being the kind-hearted young man that he is, asked if he could have his hair cut and donated it to the Little Princess's Trust, said Mum Claire. Not only does he want to donate the hair into this amazing charity, but he would like to be able to raise enough money to fund the hair being made into a wig for the child suffering hair loss. Tyler would like to dedicate his big haircut to Rose and Claire, both with so much love left to give, but sadly taken far too soon. Huge thanks to the groom room in Newton Abbott for donating his haircut, and especially to George for his time and patience, who cut his hair into a new short style that actually Tyler loves, said Claire. For those wanting to support Tyler's fundraiser, visit the Just Giving website and enter Tyler's fundraiser for the Little Princess Fund. And there's a lovely photo of before and after, of course, where Tyler has got, I'd say it's down to his waist hair, length hair, and now has a very nice short cropped top hair that really does suit him.
And that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 0737 6147374. Your readers this week were Graham, Lynn and me, Chris, and our producer is Mike. As usual, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye.
Bye.
From us here in the studio.